To begin with, I want to go back, continuing with the big picture, as I was yesterday. I mean, yesterday we were looking at just the immensity of time and space and our total insignificance in that respect, but the incredible significance of what is happening in these times. And we are living, I think, in the most fascinating, challenging, critical, exciting, dangerous time ever to have lived on this planet. I wouldn't swap this lifetime for any other. It's a fascinating time to be alive, absolutely. And as I was also saying yesterday, the challenges are huge challenges in many directions, but I think the ultimate challenge is within us. How do we, as a species, mature, wake up, become the fully human species we can be? And there are many lights through history that is possible. We call them the saints, the wise people, the enlightened ones, whatever. We see that many, many people in history have woken up in some way or another, and each of them has found that so valuable and important and life-enhancing and satisfying that they just wanted to share it with others. And they have done, they become spiritual teachers, spiritual leaders, wise elders, whatever. When they share what they've discovered, they're sharing it with people who haven't discovered it. And so their students, followers, disciples, you can't expect them to get it totally. They may get 80% of it or whatever. And they'll take what they get and maybe then they share that with their people and the next generation. But inevitably, things get lost, things get forgotten. And inevitably, the understanding that is there is incorporated into the existing culture. And so if you have a teacher coming into a monotheistic culture, then the people are going to start understanding that in a monotheistic way. If the teaching comes into a polytheistic culture, like in Hinduism, it's understood in that way. Or say Buddha and Lao Tzu, Confucius, their teachings were put in a sort of in an atheistic culture. Their teachings were not expressing any divinity or gods, but it's the same basic message. And as that happens, as time goes on and as the culture absorbs it, it gets lost. The wisdom gets lost, and then someone else comes along and regenerates that wisdom, revitalizes the tradition, and then the same thing happens. So I see the history of spirituality, it's like these lights appearing, and then gradually the light gets sort of absorbed by the culture, and another light appears, and it gets absorbed, another light appears, and it gets absorbed. And what is fascinating today is that lights like this are appearing all over the place, all over the world. And that's partly because we are aware of all over the world. I was saying last night, we're not just aware of what's going on in our village. You know, we have the benefit of teachings from around the world and also whatever people teaching in time back in history. But also, this whole process is accelerating. We're talking about the acceleration yesterday that happened in terms of understanding. It happens in technology. It also happens in the negative effects of the technology, the damaging effects on the planet, also accelerating with the accelerating technology and accelerating population. And that all comes from positive feedback, that something, whatever is achieved, whatever is developed, whatever is discovered, inevitably makes it easier for the future. We're always making things easier to be developed, to be invented, to be distributed. And it's that thing that each new development facilitates future developments. And that's what keeps it accelerating and growing. And I see exactly that is happening with human consciousness. The more we have access to these teachings, this wisdom, the more that we grow individually. I mean, just take, you know, each of us, you know, the incredible access we've each had in our own lives in different ways to, could be individual teachers, programs, workshops, meditation techniques, books, videos, whatever, things on the web. Incredible access we have. And that's feeding into us. In one way or another, we are each of us on our own journey of awakening, but we're awakening faster because of that than if we were just sitting on our own doing nothing. We have the benefit of all that wisdom. And then we're feeding back into the system. As we awaken, we are feeding back into the system in many different ways. For some of us, like myself, it's very overt because I'm feeding back in terms of whether I'm writing or teaching or whatever, or just conversations. But we each feed back, whether it's the way we are at work, how we bring up our children, how we interact in society, what we want to do, how we live that awakening, even just living it reflects back onto other people. I'm sure you all know that when you're with someone who's really clear and open-hearted and not coming from a lot of ego, something sort of rubs off on you. And so that's happening with all of us, to each of us. And so there's that positive feedback, which is again helping things go faster and faster and faster. And just the last, I would say just the last 10 years really, what started happening is many people who started on this journey themselves back in the 60s are coming to fruition, really, really waking up to that truth in themselves. And I find that fascinating. It means you don't have to just go and read books, you can actually tap into people live, which is again fueling that whole process of awakening. I think what's happening is there's a whole new spiritual renaissance happening on the planet. But it's happening in a different way than it ever happened in the past. Because in the past you had, a light appeared, Buddha appeared, Jesus appeared, whatever, Lao Tzu appeared, or many others whose names are now forgotten. Those lights appeared, and they were individual lights, and they did great teaching in their local communities. What's happening today is there is no single spiritual teacher that's emerging. We don't have yet. This is the person who's now going to lead the world into a new spiritual renaissance. There's thousands of people emerging. We are all leading each other. Some people are really clearly very clear and awake, and others are less so, but it's happening collectively. So instead of individual lights appearing, it's like the whole of humanity is beginning to light up collectively. Some of us being brighter lights than others, but it's a collective process that's happening. And I don't think there's never been this collective awakening happening on the planet before. And that's what makes, I think, these times so fascinating. And we're each playing our part in that. And it really began, I think, back in the 60s. For those of us who were there. For those of us who were there, it was a remarkable time. Remarkable time. I mentioned very briefly yesterday the creative process. It's something I've been fascinated with, is the creative process in people. And a lot of the time when I was working in corporations, I was using the creative process as a way to sort of deliver the spiritual ideas. But the creative process, you can divide into various stages, but in the most simplistic model, you have a lot of thinking going on, what's often called the preparation, the thinking about the issue, the dissatisfaction, the frustration, the feeling something needs to change. There's all of that that sort of builds up. It's a problem you need to solve, or if it's in art, you have this vision, but it's like, how do you do it, whatever. Then there's that moment, it's often called the creative flash, which is the new idea, which seems to come out of nowhere. Though, as I was saying yesterday, it actually comes out of our unconscious. Usually we know the answer, and the creative flash comes when we relax enough, or have a couple of extra drinks, or whatever it is. The creative flash comes through, but that's not enough. Having the creative idea is one thing, and then you've got the third phase, which is working it out, translating that into action. How do you actually make that happen in the world? That's the sort of the most simple model of creativity. And I see what happened in the 60s was the creative flash. There'd been a tension building up in society. And what happened with the Second World War really fueled into that tension. There was many different things. There was the feeling of, you know, we can't have wars like this again, particularly now with nuclear weapons. We dropped the first nuclear weapons. So there was that whole, the anti-war movement really grew out of that. When the, before that, there'd been what we call conscientious objectors, you know, a few people who did not believe in war, but it was, that was a very minor thing. After the Second World War, suddenly the anti-war movement, the nuclear disarmament movement, that blossomed, and that was, of course, Vietnam and America fed into that. It's a whole sort of dissatisfaction with the system. And at the same time, there was this feeling that it was rebuilding after the war and moving into what many people at the time called the plastic culture. You know, we'll make all these nice commodities for you and we'll all live nice, happy lives and everybody will be taken care of, sort of thing. And there was that reaction that was something that was missing from life. There was, the juice was beginning to go out of life. There was this sort of bubbling dissatisfaction that was going on, just bubbling. It wasn't coming to a head. And the psychedelics, I think, played a similar role to what Brandy did for Kekulé. They loosened up the thinking, showed people there were other realities, other ways of living, other possibilities. And that was like the creative flash. I think what happened in the mid-60s was that creative flash for a culture, that it could be different. We don't have to go this old route. We could do something different. Which, you know, was sort of naively summed up as peace and love, man. But that's profound. That really is profound. You know, it's like there was the vision, we can live in peace. You know, imagine all the people living life in peace. We can do it. It's possible. And all you need is love. That was, to me, like the creative flash. That was the realization that we could have a different society, we could live in peace, and comes back to the development of love. How do we do that? Then we moved into the third part of the creative process. How do you actually make that happen? Having that vision was one thing. And the 60s are often put down for that. Oh, yes, just a load of hippies, you know, seeing, having that naive vision. It was naive because it wasn't yet grounded in actuality. The vision was there. But it takes that time to work the vision into reality. And I think that's what's been going on since then. I see various sort of loose phases of that. First was, you know, like, maybe Eastern religions, they've got the answer. You know, they know how to achieve this naturally. There was this sort of dissatisfaction with the Western religion. And you know, because most of these people coming out of, you know, Judeo-Christian backgrounds and seeing that the Eastern religions had something. And so there's this sort of movement to the East, exploring Eastern religions. And that was the age, the 70s were very much sort of the age of the gurus, all the gurus coming over and following gurus and learning from them. And then we moved into sort of self-Western created workshops, the programs, the S, and individuals moving into more sort of psychological work, inner work. And the whole thing's been growing and moving on and exploring different ways of doing it. And my feeling is just the last few years that's collectively coming to a new sort of fruition, which is often given the label of sort of Advaita or non-duality. I don't know how many of you heard those terms, non-dual, Advaita, most of you came.
What is that?
Advaita is an Indian term, and it just literally means not two. Advaita, not two, not divided. And so non-duality is just the Western translation of Advaita. And Advaita is one of the many Indian philosophies. There's many different sort of worldviews in India. But basically it's saying that underneath all is one. But in several distinct areas. One is saying there's no actual distinction between what we call the self and what isn't the self. That duality isn't actually real. And that's something I want to look at later, that whole apparent duality between self and not self, whether it's me and the rest of the world, or the sense of self as an observer and experience, that's a constructed duality. But probably one of the most profound senses that I see happening in the world today is the realization there's actually nowhere to get to. It's often called, Advaita says there's no path, which is a paradox, because, if you don't do anything, if you don't follow a path, if you don't have some spiritual practice, you're just going to sit there, nothing's going to happen. And we've all been on our own spiritual paths, whether they've been organized, official spiritual paths, or just our own inner journey of exploring, discovering, whatever it is. We've all been on our paths, and we've learnt a lot from those paths. But it seems like almost the ultimate learning is that you don't need a path. Some teacher I heard recently was saying that the value of all techniques is they eventually take you to the point of realizing you don't need a technique. Realizing techniques don't actually do it. But you need techniques to take you to that point of realization that it's actually about coming back to where you are, coming back to your true essence, rather than trying to achieve some wonderful, exotic, transformed, altered state of consciousness where everything is light and you see all the angels coming out of the walls or whatever it is. Those sort of the images I know I had in my own journey at times, just gradually shedding all those images and just realizing that it's coming back to our own essence, our own true nature. And when we do that, we find the peace, the love, the compassion, the ease, the relief, the wisdom that we've been looking for out there. And the process just seems to get simpler and simpler. And as it does, the acceleration just builds on that as well. And so I just feel this, the first 10 years of this millennium, this century, are fascinating in terms of, I think, where the spirituality is going on this planet. And who knows where it's going to be going over the next 5 years, given that things are speeding up. And in this, there's this sort of honing in on what the actual real truth is. I think we are collectively honing in on that, what this underlying distilled wisdom is. Which means, we're all beginning to say the same thing. I was giving a talk a while back in England, and at the end of it, this person stood up and he said, "Mr. Russell," he says, "what is it you are saying that's different from what everybody else is saying?" And my response was, "Nothing, I hope. If I'm saying something different from what everybody else is saying, then clearly I'm off track." His view is, I should be saying something new. I don't think there's anything new to be said. It's all been said numerous times by numerous people throughout history. The challenge is, how do you say it? How do you say it in ways that we can help each other get it? That's the challenge. It's not what you say, but how do you say it? How can you just navigate through our various mindsets, belief systems, prejudices, attachments? How do you navigate through that so that the truth can take root? You can lay the seed in each other's minds. That's the challenge of how do we communicate it rather than what we're communicating.